Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of season 4 of the Wormburner podcast. I'm your host, Justin, and for this week, I've got a special guest for you guys all today. He is the owner of Goals TV. It is Jose Tellez. How are you doing, good sir?
Justin, I'm doing well, man. Thanks again for the invite. Always appreciative. I love being able to talk footy with other creators out there. I'm doing well, man. Can't complain. Coming off of a massive win for my team, Arsenal, this morning. Keeping the title charge alive. Love to see it. A ton of footy on today, too, man. USL is on CBS. Copa del Rey, if you follow La Liga, is being played today. Spain basically shut down for that. That's going to be massive. And then you got the rest of USL and MLS on later today. So, yeah, man. Saturdays, I cannot complain. Ton of action.
For sure. I think that's one of the things that when it does come to the weekends, you have so much soccer, and sometimes you just have way too much soccer. You have to have 3 or 4 TVs on at the same time to be able to see all the games.
Absolutely.
I am so ready. I'm so ready because especially after this, I'm going to be watching the Copa del Rey final. Like that, as soon as I get off here, I'm not even editing. I'm editing on Monday.
Let's go, man. Right there with you too. I got another errand to run, but I'll be kind of tuning out my phone, but I'll be right there with you, brother. Copa del Rey, for the first time in a while, I think it features two of the non-traditional teams, right? Mallorca and Athletic Bilbao. For those who follow Spain, you'll know that, you know, typically we see either Real Madrid or Barcelona or both in this final. So yeah, man, I think a big advertisement for La Liga today.
Definitely. And then did you see the post with, I believe it was Kyle Loren and Steve Nash are both supporting Mallorca?
I did actually see that. Yeah, man. I saw that. I saw Emerick Laporte come out of the woodwork and show support for Bilbao. I think Bilbao are probably the favorites today. But I think nonetheless, I mean, Mallorca have upset more than a few big teams in Spain this season. I think it's just going to be a banger game. I can't wait for it.
I think a perfect transition from talking about this is going to our first topic, which is Bayer Leverkusen, the absolute storm that they've been on in the Bundesliga. Yep. Is unreal. They have not only dominated the league, but they have just put everyone else to shame. They are now 16 points clear of Bayern, having not been able to upset or get a win over Heidenheim.
Heidenheim, yep.
Today and where do we go from this?
Dude, it's a crazy, I don't know, man. If you always ask me, you know, like who do you think are the best teams in the world, this and that. And it's crazy still, even with the record they have going, how often Bayer Leverkusen gets overlooked. I think the one knock you could probably put on this team at the moment that wouldn't give them the outright title of best team in the world is just the fact they're not in Champions League and they're in Europa League. But that's really it. Outside of that, the most informed team in Europe. They have Bayern trailing. Now I think it's by more than 13 points. Now I think it's closer to 15 or 16. It's quite a bit. Like they have stretched that lead to an insurmountable point total. Like to this day, as we have this conversation, it blows my mind that Xabi Alonso, as young as he is in his coaching career, has been able to get this out of this Bayer Leverkusen team. Not that they're bad, but they're just a young, hungry team that has found a way to buy into this system that he's implementing, and they're putting it all together, convincingly sweeping Bayern Munich this season. Bayern have their own troubles, right? We saw them lose today. I don't even know what to say about Tuchel and the boys anymore. They're on a completely different, I don't know, just negative spiral. As an Arsenal fan, I'm here for it. We take on Bayern Munich in the Champions League next week, so I'm here for it all day, and I hope they continue that form. But with that said, the most impressive piece about all of this, not that Leverkusen could not do it with this version of this team. I think it's more that Xabi Alonso has now become probably the most wanted manager in all of Europe because of what he's accomplished in his very short time with this young and very hungry Bayer Leverkusen team. Man, they're a lot of fun to watch.
They really are. And I want to say that not only is what's happening in the league crazy, the German Cup has been absolutely insane as well, because you have not one, you have not two, but 3 teams in the semifinal that are in the second division or below of the German Cup. That is absolutely insane just in itself.
Madness. Madness, man. But that's the beauty of Cub football, right? It's kind of what you want. I can't think of another time we've seen this in history. We have Coventry City in the FA Cup semifinal, and that's a great story. And who knows? Maybe they'll be able to pull off an upset over Man United. But with that said, it's just like this is what you want. And we're going to talk a little bit about a cup competition later on in this show and you know, maybe how they're going somewhat in the opposite direction, at least in terms of the sentiment around it. But with the DFB Pokal, man, it's something that, you know, I'll be honest, by the time you get to this stage of the competition, not that I tune out, but I almost have this expectation around who's going to be involved at these latter stages. We just talked about the Copa del Rey featuring two non-traditional clubs to an extent in the final. We're probably going to see that. I mean, Leverkusen, you probably could say that there maybe was a little bit of expectation considering how quickly they started their season that they could make it to the final. But you almost everyone had them up against a Dortmund, a Hoffenheim, a Bayern Munich, somebody in the top flight that's going to really challenge them and make sure they don't walk away with every trophy. Now, I'm not flat out giving it to Leverkusen at this point, but you got to imagine that, you know, there's going to be this lower division side that meets them. And who knows, man, maybe a little bit of cup magic, maybe something that they can hang in the rafters for quite some time after this. I don't really know, but I think this is something that it's the beauty of football. It gives you something to hang your hat on around this game, even if your team, as big of a team as they might be, right, didn't make it to the final. I love seeing stuff like this, 100%.
Yes, the beautiful football that Xabi Alonso has been able to orchestrate at Leverkusen, I think can be said in two statistics that I ended up pulling on the side, looking at the overall contributions that they've made overall in games. They have an XG or an expected goal percent, or not percentage, goodness, expected goals against opponents sitting at 55.7 goals in these 27 games that they had played up until when I checked the statistic. And out of those 55.7 XG that they have, they've scored 66 times.
Wow. Jeez.
And it's just insane.
It is the overperformance, and that's really what this is. For those, I mean, for those who watch this game for a long time, right? You get these dream runs, and it happens everywhere, right? It happened Arsenal when they found themselves in a title charge last season out of nowhere after finishing outside of Champions League places the season before. Massive overperformance. Granted, they were also kind of progressing to this point. We've seen it in MLS, right? We've seen it in MLS with certain teams kind of overperforming year in and year out. St. Louis going in the first year as an expansion team, going in and taking home the Western Conference first place and dominating so many teams along the way. There's, you know, you see it, these one-offs. I'm not sure if this is going to be the case, especially considering that Xabi Alonso apparently has confirmed his allegiance to Bayer Leverkusen. We talked about a little bit earlier, right, how wanted he is as a manager. I think Liverpool fans were pretty upset to hear that they would not be getting their man, someone who could replace Klopp and kind of usher Liverpool into a new era. I think maybe there's a little bit of him waiting for Real Madrid in the distance as Ancelotti's contract winds down in a couple years. But nonetheless, I think from Leverkusen's standpoint, I think Xabi Alonso also wants to finish what he started. I think Europa League's great. Maybe they win it. Maybe they don't. They have West Ham on the horizon in the next round. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. We'll see how they net out. And I imagine, too, there's some young talent on this team that may leave after this season just because they're wanted players, right? And the big clubs will come calling. But I think he's going to want to test this team in the next level, if you will, right, with Champions League football, see if they can find a way to consistently remain at the top in the Bundesliga. Dude, this team, what's kind of crazy about this, I think from an American standpoint, it's also made the Bundesliga much more attractive to watch. Look at how long Bayern's been at the top. When I think of the term Farmers League, not to knock the Bundesliga too much, but I don't want to watch the same team win every single season. And, you know, on a contrasting level, the Premier League is heading towards that, right? If Man City somehow pull off a fourth in a row, which no team has ever done, I will go as far as saying the Premier League could be the next Farmers League where it's the same team winning year in and year out. I just don't want to watch that. I want a little bit of drama. I want there to be, you know, more than just a two-horse race every year. La Liga has that, you know, seemingly year in and year out as well. The Bundesliga has become quite a spectacle for those who may not have tuned in on this side of the pond season in and season out. And with how good Bayern are, the fact that they went out and added Harry Kane in the offseason, as you know, and they did all the jokes, right, about whether or not he's brought his Spursy aura with him over to Bayern Munich. But they added one of the best strikers in the world, and it didn't really matter. Leverkusen went out and found pieces like Granit Xhaka, like Alex Grimaldo, and, you know, put some of that, you know, seasoned veteranship around these young talents. And look what they're doing, man. It's crazy. I think the Bundesliga has to be on everyone's radar moving forward.
For sure. That is, I would tend to disagree, tend to agree with you when it does come to the fact of Harry Kane bringing his Tottenhamness to Munich. Because just, we are genuinely looking at Bayern for the first time possibly finishing in third place since 2011. That is so weird to say that such a dominant side for the past 10 years is looking at a third place finish. And so
it's so weird, man. And look at today's result. It's like the perfect, you mentioned the Harry Kane-ness, if there is that, to this Bayern Munich team. It really is that. The game against Heidenheim today, I'm not going to lie, when it was 2-0, I turned it off. Like, I was like, okay, Bayern won. I mean, it's Heidenheim. They had the experience of being Bayern Munich. You know, Gnabry was you know, got on the score sheet. That hasn't happened in a little bit. Kane scored. I'm like, okay, you know what? It's done. They should walk away with this, even if they're the away team. And lo and behold, right, a second half, a tale of two halves in this match, and Heidenheim come back to win and just further increase the gap between Bayern Munich and Leverkusen. I don't know, man. If they fall to third, like you just mentioned, I don't know. We may see this man legitimately go trophyless for his career. And that's such a wild thing to say. I thought that when he moved to Bayern, there's no way he doesn't win a trophy at this point. There's just no way. Like, this team, Bayern, is so used to consistently winning at least a trophy every single season. So it's the beauty of football, man. It's really how it works. Some of these players do have this kind of aura around them. And for those Harry Kane fans out there, for those England fans out there, England has to believe that Harry Kane is not going to have this type of aura around him when they go to the Euros this summer. But trust me, if they go to another final and Harry Kane misses big opportunities or a penalty kick or whatever the case may be, like we've seen in years past, he is never going to shake this reputation that he has.
It's just so unfortunate to have such a star at this level that's just not getting the trophies that some people may say he deserves in some respects. The records that he does hold, he should have something to show for it.
Should, but, I agree.
And so it's just one of those things, and like you were saying, aura, looking back at the statistic that I was saying, having to do with 66 goals in the league so far, in overall games for Leverkusen, 35 of the goal contributions on that team have been from two players. That is Grimaldo and Frimpong. It's just the two, the 9 times out of 10 when Leverkusen are lining up, they're lining up in a 3-4-3 with Frimpong and Grimaldo on left and right respectively. Yep. And they're just absolutely destroying sides just by themselves.
It's so crazy, man. You know what pisses me off about the Grimaldo deal was Barcelona had for those who follow me, and then they know how I talk about this on the timeline, I'm a Barcelona fan as well, and I would say even before I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm a Barca guy, and we had a real shot on a free transfer to go get this man when his contract at Benfica ended, and who did we opt for instead? Marcus Alonso. It makes no sense, man. Grimaldo was sitting there waiting. I think coming into this team, he would have done exactly what he's doing at Leverkusen. Who knows where Barca would be now against Real Madrid as the league leaders right now. It's disheartening from that perspective. But, I mean, I've been knowing about this guy. He's Catalan through and through, right? He comes from Barca's academy. He understands how to play the game the way Xabi Alonso wants to play it. And Frimpong, I feel like, has been this guy that we've been waiting for. We've known his ability. If you follow the Dutch national team and kind of some of the youth prospects that are coming up, you know, in kind of this interesting period when the Dutch aren't quite the powerhouse they used to be. But I think in all honesty, it's just this transitional phase where they're incorporating younger talent, and Frimpong is of that pool, right? Of that caliber of younger talent who, man, he's, you could argue he might be a better attacker than a defender. I mean, at times he's able to push forward. He can score goals. His accuracy with crosses is hands down just one of the best for his age. I really got a feeling that, I mean, he's not going to be at Leverkusen much longer, in my opinion. I think at some point the price will be right. A big not that Leverkusen aren't the big club, right? But a European giant will come knocking. And I think, you know, his days at Leverkusen, whether it happens this summer or the following summer, they're numbered in a good way, right? That's just an advertisement for how great Leverkusen have been. But I mean, it's, we look at the goal contributions too. You mentioned the XG, but if you look at the goal contributions for these two guys. It's so insane how crucial they are to all of the attack they're able to produce so far this season.
For sure. And not only talking about attack just in general, but the defense of Leverkusen as well has just been on a different level. Talking about XG, the total XG for opponents going against Leverkusen in 27 games, not including this latest one, has been a 23.3 XG. So they're only conceding, apparently supposed to be conceding, 23 goals in 27 games, which is already unreal as is. But as of right now, they've only conceded 19.
That's insane, man. It's insane.
It's mind-numbing. It's mind-numbing, to say the least.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, like I said, Leverkusen, I don't know how much longer they can hold up. And then, frankly, they don't need to hold up in the Bundesliga anymore. I think, you know, the lead is stretched. We're already in April, right? I think the lead is so far stretched that they could wrap this thing up by the end of the month. Which, again, you think about how this season started, how much pressure Bayern are under to deliver another Bundesliga just because of all of, I would say, the botched moves heading into this season. Bringing in Harry Kane was great, right? But they made a big move choosing to fire Nagelsmann at the point that he was at in the previous season to bring in Tuchel. That move to me made no sense. It was one of those moves where I'm like, if this does not work, you're fired. As far as like a technical director go and a manager of a club, you know, Oliver Kahn and some of the leadership there over at Bayern, I just thought that it didn't make a ton of sense. And it just kind of showed you where they were and how much pressure they were under from the fans to deliver. And it's now fast forward to where we are today. It really all kind of makes sense. It was setting the Bundesliga up for a new player out there, right? A new team out there to come in and kind of take the reins of this league and show that there's still a ton of quality football being played. I think when it comes to Bundesliga teams, my preferred team is probably Dortmund of all of them. And they have their own problems. Don't get me wrong. They have things that they have to work on 100%. But it's just great. And it's almost a breath of fresh air to see another team, especially being led by such a young manager, coming in and completely, to sub quote, you know, Mourinho or Fergie here, knock Bayern off their pedestal, right? Like, that's exactly how I would think about this. I want to see more of it. I want to see someone topple over PSG in Ligue 1. I want to see someone, you know, topple over Real Madrid and I guess Barcelona, as much as it pains me to say it, in La Liga. It's just, I feel like modern football is now presenting us with this opportunity of new teams, new faces who are going to make themselves relevant.
Absolutely. I think that is where I wanted to lead with our final question having to do with Leverkusen. Is this going to be a one-off thing? Are we looking at a complete shift in the Bundesliga just in one singular season? Or is Bayern going to bounce back?
That's a great question. I think the summer will be very telling for Leverkusen. Like I said, I think, you know, we're going to see a summer potentially where some big players exit. I think the board at Leverkusen would do very well to make sure that guys like Florian Wirtz are tied down for a little bit. Guys like Frimpong are tied down for a little bit. With that said, I believe Xabi Alonso's tactics and systems are dynamic. And when I say that, I mean, that's a massive positive for them, right? I don't believe they'll go into next season with the exact same tactics as they had this season. And even if they did, I believe on the fly, this young manager can adjust. I don't believe they'll be able to replicate what they've done this season, but I'd like to believe that this is potentially the ushering in of a new era. I think Bayern right now are still somewhat in free fall. You know, they're trying to figure out Bundesliga. Champions League right now is their saving grace. So, you know, they will be up for this quarterfinal match against Arsenal. They will show, and again, you have to feel for Bayern here, right? They've embarrassed Arsenal so many times in the last decade plus in this competition that they're going to feel confident. They're going to feel like they know this opponent decently well, even if they don't. And they're going to come out swinging in every sense of the word. So Champions League is their saving grace. If they do not, if they get knocked out, especially if it's an epic fashion by this Arsenal team, this young Arsenal team, I have to believe that Bayern are in free fall, and that until Tuchel is out, until they move on certain players who may not be playing for the badge anymore, they will not be able to keep up with the revolution that's happening at Leverkusen. And again, even if they lose games next year, right? Because again, they're still the most informed team in Europe. They cannot replicate two seasons in a row what they're doing today. It does not mean that Leverkusen will fall out of relevancy. I think it means that there may now be, you know, those three big clubs in the Bundesliga, right? Between Bayern, Dortmund, Leverkusen. We'll throw guys like Wolfsburg in there, Hoffenheim in there. There's a lot. I think there's a lot now to pay attention to when it comes to this league. And if they win in epic fashion this season, the Bundesliga needs to be a league that we're all heavily tuned into next season and beyond.
Yes, I think that's one of the things that needs to happen going forward is now there is no top dog, it seems like, that in the Bundesliga. So where are we going from there? So going to from one top dog, one league that's still trying to find their top dog, to the Premier League, where there has been a top dog, but are we going to see them do it again when it comes to the end of this season? Because it seems like it's a three-horse race going into the final weeks of this season. And yeah. I wanted to take each team, kind of break it down a tiny bit, and see where we're at the end of it. Because we've got three teams, Arsenal, Manchester City, Liverpool, fighting for this title this season. What are your thoughts on Arsenal right now?
Man, I feel fantastic at this moment, and I'll put that caveat on it, about Arsenal. I think it's a different side. I get asked all the time, like realistically, whether I feel we can win the league. I'm always very inclined to say yes. I was saying this last season, keep in mind, right? Up until the point where Saliba went down. And I think when Saliba went down, having to rely upon some of the backups that we had in place last season, where I felt like we lacked depth, and frankly lacked mentality as a young team, I almost conceded the title at that point to, again, the treble winners, Manchester City. And I believe that, you know, last year everything fell into place perfectly for them. Arsenal tend to have that kind of feeling this season, right? If you look at how the season has gone, it's kind of gone in phases, right? Phase one being the start of a new season, incorporating new signings like Declan Rice and Kai Havertz and even David Raya. You kind of look at this team and say, okay, there's pressure on them. Absolutely, there's pressure on them. They conceded the title in epic fashion last season. This season, they've pumped out a lot of cash, a lot of money. It needs to work well for them. And in the first, let's say from, you know, August all the way through November-ish, December, we did not look like Arsenal of last season, right? We were kind of, you know, skating by in results, netting out winners in the last second potentially, and that's not sustainable. We saw that in the tail end of last season, right? Barely scraping by in some of these games to just maybe nick a point here or nick 3 points here. And, you know, champions, while that can be a sign of a team who might feel like they're destined to win it, champions know how to control matches and know how to get things done, even if they have to go against the tactics they've been using for quite some time. So, I think in the first half of the season, it all kind of culminated with that very weird 2 week dip in form where we lost to West Ham, we lost to Fulham back to back, we got knocked out of the Carabao Cup by Liverpool. And then you start to kind of ask yourselves as an Arsenal fan, is this it? Are we doing it again already? Are we capitulating when we need to try and fight for every trophy available? That 2 week period where we kind of took off, went to Dubai and came back, since then, I feel like mentally they've hit another level. Since the start of 2024, Arsenal have scored 33 goals, have conceded four. They've won 10 matches, drawn one, and lost none. So this run of form that Arsenal is in right now is hitting epic proportions, right? I mean, we really haven't seen a team hit this type of run of form since the Invincibles. And not to say that this is that type of team through and through, but I believe they're slowly becoming, not just on the pitch with their technical ability, but more importantly, mentally, a team of monsters, a team that, you know, the best way I can epitomize this team right now, we were comfortably ahead 3-0 to Brighton today, away at Brighton. And in the final minutes, there's a shot that's basically free, wide open. If he gets it off, it's probably going in. It's going to maybe be a 3-1. Gabriel gets in front of it, does everything to get in front of it, blocks it. And when he does, he might as well have scored a goal. He celebrated in a way that I feel like this team is not just playing for the end result of a win, right? But they're playing for a perfect performance, player by player, all over the pitch. And that's a mentality thing. Clean sheets are to defenders what goals are to forwards. And I think that this is just representative of a team that is going to be very, very difficult for any team to beat. And I think we'll have a say between now and the end of the season who gets to be champion. We have some big matches coming up, but I really feel as Arsenal are hitting a stride that I have not seen from this team in nearly a decade.
For sure. And touching on the matches Arsenal have going forward, the big ones, at least to me, the notable matches are Chelsea at home.
Yeah.
You have the North London Derby away, and you also have Manchester United away. And this is excluding the Champions League.
Yep.
Oof, this is going to be really tough for Arsenal. But as you were saying, I think that this is a good formed Arsenal that has created a mental wall on themselves of we aren't playing for just that win. We're playing for more than just the win. And just as you had said before, I think that was a perfect example going in and summarizing this Arsenal side for sure.
Yeah, I think just to put a bow on it, you know, with those three big matchups coming up, I am nervous, don't get me wrong. And I will say that I've been nervous for even some of the trap game potential that we have left in the schedule, right? This Brighton game that we played today included. I think, you know, if you switch off even for a second, the Premier League could punish you. And, you know, these games, even with some of these teams being where they are, right? The Chelsea game at the Emirates, we drew 2-2 at Stamford Bridge. That was a very weird game because Chelsea, in my opinion, they're just a weird team. They tend to turn it on for the big opponents, especially for the London rivals, right? Against Tottenham, West Ham, Arsenal, anybody in between. And then they kind of mentally let off when they, you know, they sort of play down to their competition, right? When they play against the Brentfords of the world, the, you know, the Evertons of the world, whatever it may be. But this past match against Manchester United this past week, where they, in an epic, crazy fashion, netted out a 4-3 result, I think what it showed me too was that this team, while they do have scoring power, they're just very susceptible, very susceptible. So I think that for me, I feel like we take the Chelsea game. I think that, you know, controlling that game as much as possible, forcing that team to run and not have the ball as much as possible is going to just disrupt this very, very young Chelsea squad in a way that I don't know if Poch will be able to kind of adjust for it. The other two games make me more nervous. I think the one that makes me the most nervous is the North London Derby because it is the biggest derby, you know, for an Arsenal fan. It is away after that 2-2 result at the Emirates, which, again, I think they hit us in a weird run of form. I think we're still discovering how to properly use Declan Rice and Kai Havertz. It'll be interesting just to see what version of Spurs also show up, right? Are we going to get the Spurs that traditionally show up against Manchester City, right, where I believe that over the last two or three seasons, they've probably netted more positive results than City has against them. Or are we going to get the version of Spurs that we saw against West Ham? Or that with the one we saw against Luton Town, where they barely had to scrape by? I don't know. They're very up and down in terms of being under this new manager, Ange Postecoglou. So we'll see what version of them shows up. And then, of course, you have Old Trafford. I mean, what is there to say, right? I mean, we haven't won at Old Trafford outside of a random one-off game where Aubameyang put a penalty kick away in 2020. Outside of that, I don't think we've won there in the last five or six seasons. However, again, I'll go back to what I said. It's just a very, very different version of Arsenal. They could score on us. I totally get that. But with how down bad this team is right now, missing a ton of pieces due to injury, Ten Hag being on the hot seat, I think form is going to carry us into May when we do play Manchester United. And I will say this too. The only thing that would save Man U, in my opinion, would be Arsenal progressing to the next stage of the Champions League. Not that Arteta will prioritize. I just believe that you respect that competition. You probably rotate a little bit for the Man U game, and that gives United an outside chance to upset us. So a lot of storylines heading into the run-in. I can't wait for it.
I think out of the three, I think Arsenal, while their form and everything is great, I think that's one of the things that is one of the contributing factors as to why they are in the position that they are.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I think out of the three, I think this is my point of view coming in a little bit, is I think Arsenal could easily be the second team. If in order I was to guess which team was going to come out on top, I think City would be first, Arsenal would be second, and then Liverpool would be third. And going into Liverpool, the final games for them that I put of note is very similar, ironically, to Arsenal. It's United away, Tottenham at Anfield, and then they have Aston Villa away.
And massive games.
This is not going to be easy for Liverpool, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. I think with Liverpool, it's interesting you have them in third. I think with Liverpool, it's like we see the most variance, right? I think people either have Liverpool winning it because it's, you know, Klopp's the final season. Maybe they run with those emotions between now and the end of the year, and we'll kind of see how it all nets out. But it's weird, man. Liverpool, they kind of feel, in my opinion, how Arsenal felt last season, where you thought that the magic was just always kind of hitting them, right? They barely squeaked out a win against Sheffield United this past week. And it's one of those things where it was a McAllister wonder strike, and it just felt like they're going to continue to get these like weird, dinky results, right? But again, I think Klopp's last season, there's going to be a lot of emotion there. I don't believe they have to prioritize, because at the end of the day, this is a team that is, even if they have to rotate, is good, more than good enough to win Europa League. I think personally that's going to be something that they know is on their radar. They know that Premier League has to be something that they do prioritize no matter what. So I don't think they'll pick and choose. And also the timing of getting certain players back, right? I'm not sure if Salah's still feeling an injury, but he got subbed off 60 minutes into the Sheffield United game. That's of note. Getting Trent back, I don't know how realistic that is anytime soon. And more importantly, I think the piece for them is going to be have to rely upon Darwin Nunez finding his form. He's been so up and down. I think that striker will really start to scoring goals on a regular basis, contributing to them in this run-in for Liverpool to have a shot at overtaking Arsenal and City for the title. So I say overtaking because right now, as we sit here and record this, they are in second place. They do go to United, and a team they have not beaten this season, which is very weird to say, right? Because United have been so up and down, but at Anfield, they drew 0-0. They went to Wembley for the FA Cup, right? Lost. We all saw how epic that really was. And now they go to Old Trafford. And even though United is down bad with some of their roster with injuries, for whatever reason, United seem to get up for this derby match every single time. So, hey, look, I will be very inclined to agree with you if the result tomorrow nets out of United's favor anyway. And I would say, if it's 1 point or 3 points for United, Liverpool may have some catching up to do. I don't know how it's going to work out, but they may have some catching up to do. So the last point I'll make on Liverpool is I believe they'll actually beat Spurs at home at Anfield. I think it's going to be tough for Spurs to go there and win. But the final home game of the season for Aston Villa is at Villa Park against Liverpool. I think Unai, if Villa is still in the hunt for the top four race, if they can still do that going into the final game of the season, the final home game of the season, the fans will be up for that. The Dibu Martinez antics are going to be up for that. I think it's going to be a massive matchup that Liverpool may be on the negative end on. So we'll see. We'll see how it all nets out. But I think I'm somewhat inclined to agree with you. I think if some of these results don't go their way, especially the Manchester United result coming up, it's going to be very difficult for Liverpool.
For sure. And that's just one of the things going forward. And with Liverpool, they've it's not an option for them. I think that's one of the things when it comes to this is, while I would say maybe one of the results for Arsenal, even though they really are in a position where they can't really lose any, because if one of these three doesn't stumble, the others can't stumble either.
Exactly.
And so going from there, I feel like the weight of the matches for Liverpool are more than Arsenal's and more than City's, at least in my opinion. That's one of the things.
Yeah, I will say about City, right? Because I think, you know, we look at the remaining schedules. City have less games, right? At least as of yesterday, or before today's games even started. City had 7, Arsenal have 8, Liverpool have 8. So I think with City, an easier schedule than the other two by far, right? The toughest opponent they're probably going to have is Brighton away. West Ham at home should be a dub, if we're being honest. I think today's game, Crystal Palace, could have been a trap game for them. It almost was, right? I think if certain calls go the other way, there could have been strong upset potential at Selhurst Park. And we've seen that more than enough times, even outside of City. But I think, you know, with City, it's the other competitions. And I think when you look at Pep Guardiola and how ambitious of a manager he really is, it's the fact that between the Luton Town game coming up and the Brighton game soon after that, you have Real Madrid. You have Real Madrid for 2 games. And that's not the only competition, right? They're still in the FA Cup as well. And so they have a lot to juggle. The other competitions will factor in heavily. And I know they have a ton of ballers just sitting on the bench ready to contribute. But with that said, I mean, I think if push comes to shove, Pep is going to lean on who he feels are the most reliant and dependable heading into this run-in. So they have the easiest schedule amongst the title contenders. But when you factor in the other competitions they have on their plate, you could argue they have the most work ahead of them. And I think depending on how that tie with Real Madrid goes, I mean, that's probably going to be one of the ties of the round for the Champions League. I honestly can't pick. I think it's 50-50 in terms of who wins that. But if City do win it, and let's just assume that Bayern continues their faulty form and Arsenal win it, this became significantly more difficult for City. Because all the pressure will be on the reigning champions, right? All the pressure will be on them to deliver. They're not going to want to lose to Arsenal to Arsenal in the Premier League and in Champions League, right? They're going to pick one. And I think personally, in a knockout tie, those players, the way they looked against Arsenal last week when they drew 0-0, it looked like it meant more to the City players. It looked like it was personal for them. I think that just defending pride and defending what they're all about, and you know, they're champions through and through, they're going to want to make sure they don't get upset in Europe by a team who's also contending for a Premier League title with them. So there's a lot of drama yet to be had. I'm kind of inclined to agree with you in terms of who has the most momentum because of the three-peat that we've already seen, because they're the defending treble winners. You have to back City. I think everybody has to because of what they've done already. But I think the emotional side of it favors Liverpool. And Arsenal, being the young kids on the block, just have something to prove. They just have something to prove. They want to be the next champions of England. I think if they're picking one over the other, it's probably Premier League over the Champions League, just because I don't think they're good enough to win both. I think at some point they're going to have to pick one, maybe. Maybe they don't. Who knows? Some fans might come after me for putting it that way. But I think this is the closest race we've seen in the Premier League in I don't know how long. And to put this much work into it, to not net out what you're looking for in pursuit of a Champions League trophy, I think would be a massive disservice to this team. So I'm inclined to agree with you. City has a lot of pressure on them to deliver again. But make no mistake, Liverpool and Arsenal will have a say about it.
Absolutely. To say that neither of these teams are going to be throwing elbows, getting every single inch or every single point that they can is – it goes without saying for sure. Like that,
100%.
These three sides are going to be going for every single thing that they can get. And it's going to be, I think I agree with you more than anything. This is a title race that is so good. It is so good going into the final weeks. I think out of the previous times where we've seen a title race, it has never been this close. It really does seem like I think we were both agreeing in some facet that there are perspectives for every single one of these teams that they have the means to be able to win.
Yeah.
And so
100%.
I think this year it's I'm nervous too. Don't get me wrong. This is definitely something for me. I am not excited going into the rest of the season because one of these teams, they could be expecting a trophy and wind up with nothing.
And yeah, yeah. I mean, and look, and it's kind of crazy that, you know, there people will say that there is some pressure on Arsenal to deliver because it's been so long without a trophy. I also want fans to remember that, you know, in 10 years that Klopp has been with Liverpool, he had one trophy, right? I think that's something that Klopp, and this is why I think that, you know, while some fans are discounting Liverpool, there's got to be a chip on their shoulder, right? There really has to be. I think Pep always seeming to get the better of Klopp in this, you know, manager rivalry, whatever it may be. These two teams have delivered some of the best football we've ever seen in the Premier League and over the years, right? And I got to believe that if Klopp is going out, that he wants to go out in style, that his players want to send him out in style and pull one over on the manager who's been able to get the best of them more often than not all these seasons. So, you know, Arteta, I think there's less pressure on Arsenal because fans sometimes just expect Arsenal to find a way to capitulate when it matters most. I think the mentality of this team will surprise folks, but no matter what, right now, as it stands, Liverpool have the upper hand, right? They're going into that match against United Old Trafford with a game in hand. City and Arsenal have already played. If they do win, they'll clearly be top of the table. They won't even be tied. They'll just be firmly at the top. And City and Arsenal will have to play catch up. So we'll see how it all nets out, man. But I think this race is still very unpredictable. And if we're heading into May with, let's say, 2 points or so, maybe even three, splitting these three teams, good luck to anybody trying to predict it, man. This is going to be one for the ages.
I think a phenomenal last area that we can discuss before going to our final topic. I wanted to pick your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
Who do you see going into the dugout for Liverpool with Xabi Alonso rejecting the offer for Liverpool?
Man, that's a great question. A fantastic question, because I think Xabi Alonso made a lot of sense for what Liverpool wants to do and how they want to play. They're also fine being patient. I will say that Liverpool's fine being patient. I think they're also in a mode potentially where they might want to take a risk on somewhat of a younger manager or a less proven manager to come in and give them a little bit of time, the same way Klopp was given, what, 3 seasons before he actually started winning consistently with Liverpool. So I personally can see someone like Roberto De Zerbi being an interesting candidate. Now, I know recently he's kind of like falling down the pecking order a little bit because he will not, you know, commit to anything or any other speculation that's out there right now, the rumors that are out there. He's kind of just for the season committed to what he's doing at Brighton. But I believe he's ready for his job, his next kind of big role. And there are a ton of rumors flying. You know, he's connected to Barcelona, to Liverpool. Apparently he was Pep approved for City whenever Pep decides to leave. There's a lot of opportunity for this man. He really kind of gets to pick and choose when he leaves, who he goes to. And I think he would fit with how he wants to play. I think he would fit what Liverpool wants to do, right? A high-pressing team who wants to win the ball up the pitch and, more importantly, be built around young, promising talent who is ready to own a starting position in a top side in the Premier League. So I think, personally, De Zerbi makes a lot of sense for, like, a Liverpool. That's who my pick would be if I was FSG at the moment, right, is getting someone like De Zerbi, someone who's brave, who plays courageous football, and who's not scared to take it to the big clubs. I mean, despite the 3-0 result today, De Zerbi plays his way. He wants to play that way. He wants to be in your face, creating pressure, creating opportunities. He doesn't back down from City, doesn't back down from Spurs. He tends to have this, again, this, I go back to this word, this aura about him. And while I feel he is a little bit reactionary, I think he needs to, you know, as he continues to grow as a manager, he will learn to control his emotions a little bit. But I feel that this hire makes sense for what FSG and Liverpool want to build. Now, with that said, the perfect candidate to me is Xabi Alonso. So if you're Liverpool, does that mean that you play the waiting game? Does that mean that you find, you know, a manager who can help you get the job done for a couple seasons, right? Kind of just make sure while you still have a pretty promising team, provided that certain players stay when Klopp leaves, keep everything that, you know, top four is should be a no-brainer. Someone who can keep a top four race, someone who can keep the team relevant in Europe, and continue to attract talent that is ready for the project when the new manager comes in. So I don't know, man. It's a really interesting question. I personally am leaning towards someone like De Zerbi, who was doing things like this at Sassuolo, who's gone out to Brighton now and is doing wonderful things there, attracting young, promising talent to Brighton. And I got to believe if he was to take some of his Brighton talent with him to Liverpool, that would be a massive talking point, right? Looking at guys like Etupinha, looking at guys like Valentin Barco, even someone like Ansu Fati, who's had such promising potential, but really hasn't found a way to get his career back on track post-injury at Barcelona. So I think De Zerbi, to me, makes the most sense. But with that said, I think they still have to decide as a club whether or not they want to wait for someone like Xabi Alonso or find the replacement now.
Sure. I think that's really good insight moving into the final weeks and going into the next season, because that is the big talking point for them. They've got to find some kind of a resolution that will benefit them the best. And is that the way? We don't know yet. That's, I think, when it comes to managers in general, I don't entirely know or see a specific name in particular. I know that at least one name that I've been floating around was basically Hansi Flick, but I don't really see him going into this Liverpool side. I think going forward, I had seen him in more of like a Barca side where there are bigger names. There is this establishment of the side where I don't know. I just don't see it with Liverpool.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. You know, Hansi Flick. I think he's a fantastic manager. I think, you know what, for Liverpool side, he actually would make some sense. It really depends on the philosophy that Liverpool wants to have as a club post-Klopp. That's the big thing, right, is that, you know, FSG gave Klopp what he needed to be ultimately successful and get to places they haven't been in so long. But with, you know, the reason why I feel like Flick, I think, would make sense for Barcelona in the short term is because of what he offers in experience. And there are a ton of big names. Barcelona is a very high-pressure job, probably one of the most high-pressure in the world, even more so than Liverpool. And I think Liverpool fans will feel like, oh, that's a crazy shout. But in my opinion, there are three clubs that are bigger than really any other club on the planet, and that is Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Manchester United. And outside of that, no other club carries the brand and the weight of those badges. So, you know, with that said, I think Flick would make sense for like maybe a couple seasons at Barcelona, but long term, I think going back to their identity of building around youth, around La Masia, and, you know, piecing together a few key veterans around them is probably the path forward for Barcelona, especially considering some of the financial troubles. I think Flick would, I don't think in his career he has a great track record of utilizing youth talents to get the job done. And so if he goes to a job like Barcelona, I imagine he'll have demands around moves in the transfer market. And right now that club just can't accommodate those. So I think, you know, for someone like Liverpool, though, who is probably, you know, maybe a little more open to spending if they need to, especially if they lose players like Salah, if they lose Trent to Real Madrid in the summer or whatever the case may be, then I think, you know, someone like Hansi Flick could make a lot of sense. I think my question is whether or not he's ready for the Premier League. I think, you know, he struggled a little bit at Germany post Bayern. I think that, you know, there's just some questions around what has he done lately, but he made no mistake, man. I think if, you know, his tactics implemented would be somewhat similar to Klopp's, the high octane, maybe even more high pressing than we've seen from Klopp's teams in the past, or even to this day. I don't know, man. I think that, you know, if FSG wanted to keep that German theme kind of rolling, I think Hansi Flick makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. So moving from Europe, I think one of the big things happening over here in the United States is the U.S. Open Cup. There's been a lot of drama, both on and off the pitch. That's one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, because here we have some people, and it seems like the room is split 50-50 that MLS Next teams are not performing to the standard that they should be when it comes to the U.S. Open Cup, whereas we're having some amateur sides getting further into the U.S. Cup and making a statement for themselves as an amateur side. And it's something that, again, the beauty of the cup. I wanted to get your perspective. Hello.
Perfect. Yeah. No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, you're good. Yeah. Sorry about that. So I mean, look, I agree with you. I think the room is split, to say the least, on whether or not, you know, what the U.S. Open Cup is doing and how they're engaging with MLS on this front is worthwhile for American soccer. You know, judgment of MLS Next side, I think, is, you know, in my opinion, a bit harsh, right? I think, you know, yes, I think, what was the number? I think 8 MLS Next Pro teams have been eliminated, half of them by, you know, amateur sides, which I think says more about just the drama of the U.S. Open Cup and is a bigger advertisement and promotion of the U.S. Open Cup than anything else. I think there is a gap in quality from MLS Next Pro to the MLS senior teams, but that's to be expected, right? And I think at the end of the day, judging these teams in a very detailed manner in the first season in which they're able to compete in this tournament is, again, somewhat a bit harsh. But with all of that said, I mean, the drama between MLS and U.S. Open Cup, I think, more boils down to the fact that I'm less critical of MLS Next sides. I'm more critical of the fact that MLS is forcing, you know, kind of some of these teams to be a part of the tournament as opposed to just letting the MLS franchises decide what players are going to be involved, right? This could have easily all been just a simple, hey, you know what? MLS teams, you guys can pick and choose what players are involved. If you want to do MLS Next players, great, do it. If you want to do your own backup rosters, great, do it. Like, leave it up to the franchises, right? But I think the issue came where they kind of made the decision on behalf of U.S. soccer fans. Now, in addition to that, it's even more heavy-handed when MLS is so adamantly pushing the League's Cup, right? That is insane. Intercontinental competition should be for everyone in the pyramid, not just the top. Like, it's amazing to me that you can finish next to last in Major League Soccer and still have a place in League's Cup where you get to compete against your neighbors down south, Liga MX. And so that, to me, is where the problem really lies. I think it's wrong. I think that there should be continental competition opportunities for everyone in the pyramid, not just closed off to the top flight. That's why I think a lot of the fans who are massive fans of the Open Cup and want to save the tournament in every way have the biggest gripe of it all, right? Is that, you know, this is kind of my conspiracy theory, is that I think MLS is really trying to position League's Cup as the best, as the next best intercontinental competition, maybe trying to compete with someone like the Copa Libertadores down south, you know, and all the revenue that's attached to that, right? It's a money play more than anything else. I don't know. I think, you know, finances tend to lead much of the decision making with Don Garber and Major League Soccer, and I get it. You know, the game is a business. You do have to make decisions accordingly at times, but I think they got this one wrong. I think that you know, the Open Cup, it does need more resources. Do not get me wrong; it needs a bigger prize pool. It needs to be marketed significantly better. It needs better broadcasting rights, et cetera, et cetera. Right? There's a number of things that we need to clean up and make better. But I don't believe the solution to that is another tournament that is closed off to the rest of the pyramid. And while, you know, year one of League's Cup was exciting as hell, I loved every part of it. I thought it was insane, right, to watch Messi's first action in Major League Soccer be in the League's Cup and getting to travel the States and, you know, kind of put on the roadshow, so to speak. And, it, you know, drama all the way to that club's, you know, first trophy. That's awesome. But at the same time, it diminishes 100 years of history, 100 years of the one competition that truly embodies what this sport is supposed to be about, right? Inclusion, an open system, meritocracy, solidarity. There's so much to describe what the Open Cup is for American soccer fans. I think that's what we're ultimately all hoping you can get back to. But at the end of the day, I think this is just MLS's attempt at monopolizing soccer in America, and they may well be on their path to doing it. Who knows? Either way, I think footy fans, at the end of the day, regardless of what side of the coin you sit on, I think they'll be okay with more footy being played. That's kind of how I felt about it a little bit too, was that, you know what, we get another tournament to watch, to engage with, to see more upsets in. I'm not going to try and like hold receipts and shove it back in MLS's face. I'm an MLS fan myself. Like, I grew up watching this league since 1998. I can't really knock it too much, even with the recent bad decision-making. But I do heavily empathize with U.S. Open Cup supporters, man. They need more love, more support, and the U.S. Soccer Federation at some point should step in to give them that.
And I think the statement and the overall desire of the U.S. Cup too as well, that's a competition everyone can be a part of. It's it is the cup. It's the cup. I mean, the beauty of the cup. And talking about conspiracies, I think one of the things that I had talked about, I am in no way one of the ones that created this idea or whatever, but I was thinking about something on the way into going into this conversation with you, and I wanted to at least get your take on it.
Yeah.
Is the fact of, do you think that one of the major factors for the MLS pulling out of the US Open Cup, caused by what Sacramento did 2 years prior, where they were upsetting MLS sides left and right, and the MLS is like, holy crap, one of these younger, not younger, sorry, one of these smaller sides from a division that isn't from the MLS is going through teams?
Yeah. I think it could be, right? I think, you know, it's like one of those things where, like, if you're going to get upset by someone, it's going to be someone at your level or above. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that factored in, right? Don Garber kind of thinking to himself, as well as the owners of the franchise, is saying, you know, how does it look if we bring Messi to MLS and we get upset by, you know, some of these lower division sides? But at the same time, it's the beauty of the Open Cup. It's the beauty of cup competition in general. And I think that that fear may have been there a little bit. I will say, though, that I think the bigger kind of theory, right, and the bigger motivation for trying to implement Leagues Cup and kind of move away from the Open Cup is simply that MLS gets to control the narrative. MLS gets to see the majority of the revenue. And MLS's partners also get to experience all of those things, right? Apple TV getting to show Leagues Cup versus, you know, whoever's going to broadcast Open Cup matches and things like that. You know, they're in bed with some very powerful partners. And in order for this to be a win-win, everybody has to eat. And that's just kind of how it goes on the business side of things, right? So I think that, you know, on the competition side, there's some of that concern around someone like a Sacramento Republic or other USL sides working their way up and upsetting teams in a league that has, again, some of the best former players in the world, the likes of Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets, Leo Messi. But I think, you know, with that said, the bigger concern is, I think we don't want to let another competition see monetary gains that we could be seeing by bringing these players to their tournament. If we're going to bring them to a tournament, why not bring them to a tournament that we control? And that's kind of how my interpretation of this whole saga has really been. It's unfortunate. You know, with that said, I mean, am I going to watch Leagues Cup? Yes. I mean, especially if my team is playing, right? Am I watch every game? I have no idea, but I'm a massive fan of the beautiful game. I want to see it being played as many times as I possibly can. While the politics of it aren't great, the optics aren't great, and I don't agree with all decisions that have been made, I do believe that it is something that I'm going to be paying heavy attention to moving forward for a number of the storylines that we've already discussed. But again, just to really just enjoy more footy as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, I think that at the end of the day, that's all we really and truly want is footy that we can enjoy. We can go and watch with our family, our friends. That at the end of the day, that's exactly what we want.
Yeah.
And I think a great question to end all of this off is that it was revealed partially. I had forgotten the source. I apologize, but it was released that Messi apparently has a contract in his, or a clause in his contract that would allow him to do the exact same thing Beckham did, to be able to buy a team or buy into the MLS and ended up founding the team that he's playing for right now.
Yeah.
The interesting question I want to ask you, and we haven't had any precedent at all towards this. Where do you think Messi would place his team if he was able to buy into the MLS?
That's a great question, man. I mean, a major market, right, to kind of play his you know, the safe card from his perspective. And there's a few out there. I mean, LA has so many teams. Miami always has their team. I got to believe New York has a couple teams already. One's in Jersey, technically. I got to believe it's a major market. Now, with that said, I mean, Texas has, I guess, some opportunity through a market like San Antonio, but I don't think that's a route that he would go. I mean, I don't know. Is Florida ready for a second team? Potentially, right? I got to believe that it's something that has a connection, a city that has a connection to where he wants to be when he comes to visit the States, right? And Miami's been really great to him. I know his family loves Miami. It's a great question. I'm not really sure. I think I got to feel like maybe Florida has some opportunities for him to kind of just easily put something together that creates more of a rivalry down there outside of Orlando, outside of Miami. I don't know. We'll see. That's a great question, though. I think I wonder what markets would really be up for grabs. San Diego just got picked up in California. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Bay Area. I really don't know. What market do you think? Just top of your head.
Sure. I think one of this is just all things working in our favor, no downsides at all. I think a very interesting prospect, and something that I've even done an episode on, is the fact of possibly putting an expansion team in Puerto Rico.
Interesting. That would be crazy.
I think that would genuinely be amazing. And the progress, while yes, it is a smaller nation, it has a lot of infrastructure that still needs to be built up. I mean, yep. they get hit by hurricanes on a pretty consistent basis. Yeah. And it's one of those things, though, that looking at it, I've been able to study a little bit into it. And just the overall culture there, they do have a soccer league there. It's not huge, but they do have a soccer league there. They do have a presence there. And being able to have some kind of soccer presence in a league as big as the MLS would be ginormous for a place like Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that would be really good. And on another note, towards the positive sides, they are working on making those stadiums for their soccer league that they do have, making them hurricane proof. So they can actually make them into shelters where people can stay safe with all the hurricanes going on there. And so, but it's every time I look in that general direction, it's just been so promising. And like I said, if all things are going amazing, I think that would be an unbelievable shout for us.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the only challenge potentially is like logistically of like going to Puerto Rico for games and things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, travel is something that, you know, is always going to be a hurdle in some shape or form in the United States. The country is so massive. But with that said, I mean, it equally would also be really cool to see, you know, Messi find a way to like pull a USL championship team or something like that, or another small market team into the MLS and put that team on the map, right? Like, I'm a big advocate of grassroots and local soccer, and I think that, you know, there's so many cities and markets on this side of the country that just need a little more love, a little more attention, and if they got it, there's a real path to making that city or that market, making soccer, I should say, number one in that city or that market, right? If it was just shown some of the love that the other big markets get. So it's a really interesting question. We'll kind of see how it all pans out, but trust, I imagine we'll have a team digging hard into that, not just what makes sense in the short term, but the long tail trajectory of that decision and what that's going to look like for them.
For sure. Thank you so much, Jose. I genuinely enjoyed every single part of this conversation. Thank you so much. Do you have anything that you want to plug, shout out while we're here, what before we end this episode?
No, man, this was great. I think the only thing I would say is, like, look, guys, if you're tuning into Wormburner, please tune into them on goals.tv, G-O-L-Z.tv. They're brand new to the platform. Justin, I can't thank you enough for showing some faith in what we're building here. It's going to be a lot of fun. And look, this show was a ton of fun for me today. Off the back of watching some footy, I get to talk about it, and then I get to go watch more right after this. So, yeah, man, great Saturday, great show today. Again, anybody who's a massive fan of shows just like this one, head to golz.tv, create your free account today, and enjoy. But outside of that, man, thank you again. Feel free to kind of knock on my door and bring me back whenever you're ready.
Absolutely, for sure. That's definitely something on the radar. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jose, for your time, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Justin.